You are listening to episode 102 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast, Fiscal Responsibility.
Episode 102 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 8th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is my gold-panning brother, James Furlow.
Your what, brother?
Gold-panning brother. Come on, it's a 49ers reference. Football, game one, oh baby, beating the Green Bay Packers. Oh yeah.
They did. That was good.
Yeah. That's the Silicon Valley team, so I figure it, you know. It's okay to go all football for
Colin Kaepernick is my starting fantasy football quarterback.
Oh, baby.
So that's good.
He's a good pick. Kid's all over the field, man. He's a beast.
I haven't looked up his stats on how well he did for me, but, you know.
You didn't watch every minute of the game?
No, I don't have television, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I did not.
Do you ever watch football anymore?
Sometimes for certain playoff games or really good matchups later on in the season and the Super Bowl, I will go over to a friend's house and watch the game. But I'm there to watch the game, not to actually talk to the friend. I could care less if they're home. And so, yeah, I'm not fun to watch because I want to watch the game.
Right.
So.
Yeah. See, my strategy, because I don't watch them at home. I think I actually might be able to. I don't know. We have cable. I've never used the TV though. We're such TV hipsters. But I go and work out during the games if I'm like all on my own, so I can watch while I like go run or something. That's usually my strategy. But more importantly,
this is kind of out of left field. I finally watched Super 8 last night.
Oh, that is a great movie, isn't it?
Hilarious.
I love that movie.
It's just like, I mean, the premise is interesting, but I just love, like, they're middle schoolers, and they act like
yeah.
it.
Yeah, they did.
That's so mint.
Yeah, that's so mint. Oh, and it's such an interesting story, because it's J.J. Abrams and
Steven Spielberg, right?
Yeah, Spielberg was the executive producer, and it's like, basically, when somebody finally described it to me this way, it's when it clicked, and I completely understood the movie. But it's when Spielberg made E.T., originally he intended it to be a scary movie. And obviously, if you've ever seen E.T., it didn't end up that way. It evolved very quickly.
Very scary.
But I think he always wanted to make the scary alien invasion movie with kids. And, you know, like with a young, like, you know, main characters, which is essentially what Super 8 is. It's a scary version of E.T. that he had J.J. Abrams direct. And I thought, I don't know, I loved the movie. I thought it was great. I've watched it quite a few times.
Well, and I like it's about the kids and the way that they interact. And that's the real story. And it's just, they're just total goofballs. Like, what's the one scene where they're, you know, the military are just, you know, they're misfiring, I think, just all over the place.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
They stop at this one house, and he's like, they're like, what are you doing drinking a soda? He goes, what? It's like a war zone, and I'm thirsty.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so classic middle school. Who cares about the ramifications or who it is? I'm thirsty, so I'm drinking this right now.
Yeah, and I love the one scene where they screaming at each other because he's got to like tie a tourniquet or something, and he starts bellowing in face. I haven't even done it yet.
Yeah, just awesome one-liners.
Oh yeah,
pretty hilarious.
It's a great little movie. I didn't.
Yeah.
Nice job. That's what happens when you get professionals doing good stuff. But you know what's interesting, even more interesting than that, is not the movies, but what we're actually here to talk about. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, though, James has got a short disclosure that he's going to toss your way, lob it, as it were. Hail Mary.
I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is good to know. Cool. If you want to follow us throughout the week, there's all sorts of places you can do that. We talk about all sorts of interesting stuff and go on an interesting adventures. Our Twitter's kind of our main thing. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
I am at James Furlow and jamesfurlow.com.
Yeah, and if you want to follow me on the Instagram, I've been into the Instagram as of late. NextWiggin4 is my handle on there. Of course, Matthew D. Furlow will...
Yep, you and 150 million other users.
Woo, that's a lot of users, man. Nice job, Facebook. And if you want to go find all these clicks and links and when on everything we talk about on the show, anytime we talk about an article, we post that to furloughbros.com. We also post the YouTube videos and show clips and the different everything. So when you mass email all of your friends this really great show that you just discovered, send them a link to furloughbros.com. That's the trick. Furloughbrothers.com works as well, just in case you're wondering. Man, anytime you tell a friend, we appreciate it. It's pretty awesome. So, yeah. That's the dealio, yo.
Yeah. So, I actually want to start with I'll continue on the fantasy track. Maybe that's the right way to say this.
Okay.
Tell me if you've seen this. Give me a second.
Right now, we interact with computers in a very unnatural sort of 2D way.
Is your boy.
We try to create these 3D objects. Using a variety of 2D tools. And it doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel normal the way you should do things.
Right, 2D tools,
we started playing around with the idea and using a few of the things that are available out there, such as the Leap Motion and...
You know what Leap Motion
NX,
is, right?
Which is what we used to design the rocket. And we wrote some code to integrate the two. And we started off with what you see here, which is a wireframe of the Merlin rocket engine. And...
It kind of seems like a regular guy.
I'm going to grab it, and I can rotate it
in
multiple dimensions.
Total geek.
And then what I can do is I can put another hand in there, and I can
zoom. Kind of looks like Iron Man.
A little bit.
And zoom in and out on the wireframe.
So he's using his hands, and I can just extending them in space,
so I can move it around the screen.
Moving this 3D object on a screen.
And then zoom and translate. And this is what we started off with a few months ago.
So that was a couple months ago, right?
Yeah, and it seems pretty simple. It's not doing much dynamic stuff.
And then here, let's see.
3D projection. We started off with the kind of 3D projection that you're familiar with in the movies, where you use 3D glasses. We also did a freestanding glass projection, which is what the sort of technology that was used in the Iron Man movies.
Ah, there he goes. Yes.
And then finally, we used the Oculus Rift, which is immersive virtual reality. That actually tracks your head position, and you really are moving around the object. It feels like it's right there in front of you. Now let's use this for an actual component on the rocket, which is a cryogenic valve housing.
You
can really apply your intuition and take something from your mind to a physical object with far greater ease than we currently do.
It's like a
now that we've gotten the object out of our head and into the computer, how do we get it out of the computer and into reality? So we're actually going to print this with a 3D laser metal printer.
Yes.
So the way that the 3D printer works is it lays down fine particles of either titanium or Inconel, and then it goes over with a laser and melts those tiny particles.
So anyways, we'll just show those videos from now on. So pretty awesome. Elon Musk is this essentially, you know, this four-minute little chat about here's some cool stuff that we've been working on. And it's the future. And I think this was a different article where he joked about, like, we're literally doing rocket science. This is hard. But if we make things 3D and rotatable and you can kind of interact with them, because it's not so bad.
What I really liked about it, because one of the things he early on talks about is the idea that, you know, he says, you know, you're in a 2D world, you're doing 2D things, and there's this real bar to entry that, as somebody who works, you know, spends a lot of my time working with 3D CAD tools, he's absolutely right. You know, you've got to learn how to It's like you take a class on it, essentially. I mean, and they start you off by thinking about teaching you how to think in 3D. And once you've like learned how to think in 3D, then they finally let you start playing around with a computer program to learn all the different tools and stuff. I mean, it's like they got to retrain everything in order to build this tool. And basically, he's saying like that doesn't make any sense. We don't have to do it that way. We can build it in such a way that it just is intuitive. And anybody can do it, you know, and now it's just that the bar to entry is so much lower. If you've got a good idea, if you know what you want to see, all of a sudden you can just put your hands out there and form it like it were a real, you know, like a real object and then you know, print it out with a 3D printer. It's very cool what they're doing. I mean, it's very reminiscent of, you know, a lot of space program stuff where it's like, you know, NASA, how much did NASA invent that we use today, they invented because they were trying to send people to space, you know? And it's like, that's basically what's going on at Tesla right now, is they've got all this peripheral technology that is incredibly valuable and useful that they're just kind of like throwing out there because they're like, we needed this tool, so we built it. It's pretty cool. You guys should use it. And I'm like, all right, that's awesome. Thanks, Elon. That's, you know, and yeah, it's cool though. It's very cool. You know, I think there's something to be said for tactile feedback, you know, we'll get there eventually.
Eventually, yeah, yeah. Maybe the next iPhone. Woohoo! No.
Oh man, yeah. That's...
Man, I'm wishing. So I was talking to a few people. Have been. Oh man. Oh. Oh wait. I was. Well, it's a watch thought. It's a watch thought.
Okay. I say, are you going to wait for next week when we talk about
the No. I'm going to... It's about watches.
Okay, good. That's good. You know what? I am going to throw this in right now, though. The Bay Area is buzzing about the iPhone 5S, which I don't know if that's unique. I'd love some of our listeners to chime in and text or tweet us or Facebook or Instagram us and let us know if that's the case where you guys are. But it's like, I can't go out. I went to, like, 8 different places this weekend with 8 different groups of people, and every time we were there, somebody brought up the iPhone 5S. I mean, it was like, it's crazy, and it's like, holy cow, if that's a sign of things to come, people are looking for it, and I get a
really? What for?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, you know what it is? Honestly, I think it's the number 4. I think a lot of people held on to the 5S or the 4S because it was like their 2-year contract thing, and it's just there's a lot of people that are on that cycle, and they're all super excited for the Samsung versus the Apple.
Tell them to come talk to me. I'll set them straight.
Yeah, exactly. See, we still got to try out the Moto X. We got a request from one of our listeners saying, hey, you guys going to try that out? And I'll be honest, probably not. I'd actually like
to.
Wow,
way to just level with them.
I'd really like to, but the thing is that the Nexus 5 is supposed to debut in like a couple of weeks. That's the one I'm probably, if I get stupid and spend money I shouldn't spend on things I shouldn't spend it on, that's probably where it'll go.
Yeah, but you could get a non-contract one and then just return it after a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, I could.
So you could try it.
Yeah, but
then you just gotta float the funds.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, theoretically I could do, but the Nexus 5. Come on, man! They already leaked all the. You could do them both.
That way, you could do your compare again.
That's true.
It only costs you $50 or whatever the stocking fee is.
Yeah, but it's But did you see that? Did you see that hubbub with the Nexus 5 or the Nexus 4, the Nexus 42?
No.
I'm gonna call it the 42 from now on. But basically, it was like they did that when they we're totally bouncing around. So Android announced their new operating system.
KitKat.
And they unveiled their new giant. If you've never been to the Google campus and you're in the Bay Area, it's pretty fun to go over there because they got all those giant Android statues of all the different like candy things. So now they got a big old KitKat bar sitting in front of it, and they had this like video, you know, that they were showing of the new KitKat bar and everything that was going on. And there was this shot of this one dude with a Nexus phone with doesn't look anything like the Nexus 4, and everybody was like, what is that? and it's got some new design things that are similar to the new Nexus 7 tablet. And they're like, obviously that's the next generation Nexus 4, the Nexus 42. So that's kind of cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I totally want one. I told that. I just have two phones. That would be the problem. I don't have any justification for it.
It's you get one for a short amount of time, you use it, you try it, and then when you're done, you return it. Give you a review. It's all good.
Yeah, but you'd want to own it. That's
maybe,
the danger.
Maybe.
No, that's a good point. Maybe I wouldn't. Oh man, I'm stoked for the iPhone 5. What? Come on, man. You seem Mr. Debbie Downer over here.
I'm just saying that my 4S works just fine, and
you're like in the ballpark of upgradable time right now, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I'm. Yeah, this will be my 2 years are up. Whenever you know.
Well, you know what? We'll talk about that next week. I'm telling you what I'm most excited for about. I'm excited about iOS 7. That's actually why I'm excited.
Which I almost upgraded ahead of time when you were talking about it. And I ultimately decided not to. And the reason, this is kind of weird, is because I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get the new phone. And so I was like, so I want to keep, I don't want to say it, I want to put off the newness as long as I can, I guess. You know, because I didn't want to like, you know, download it, play it, be like, yeah, it's awesome. And then by the time it actually gets released, I'm like, yeah, okay, I've had it for like a month. It's no longer special.
Did I tell you why I didn't put it on my phone?
No, what was your reason?
Because it requires you to completely wipe the phone. You got to reset everything and re-download everything. It's not a Delta update like most, like the Gold Master is. So, yeah, I was like, forget that. It was like 2 weeks ago. So I was like, I gotta wait 2 weeks, and then I wouldn't have to go through the frustration of completely redoing my phone. Yeah, I know. We'll see. But so I didn't go for it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No. I don't see why I should spend $200 on a phone I'm gonna get the 16 gig. I don't see why I should spend $300 to $400 on a new phone, when it's like I'm totally happy with the one that I have, and you know, it works well.
Why are we friends? I want to get it, and I'm the iPhone 5 is great. But
what's really killing me is it's my student loans. Those are what's killing me because I would love, honestly, I for a while I was justifying it. I was like, okay, I won't get a new phone because I'm going to get an iPad instead. And I know they're coming out with a new one, and I've always wanted one, and you know, that'll be great to do it. And then I'm just like, or I could put the like $2,000 towards student loans. That would be cool too. And I'm just, it just kills me. Oh, it just kills me.
Yeah, it kills me too, man. You're totally ruining the show. Anyways.
I'm sorry. I still like it.
This is worth the investment, James.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know. But making good decisions, geez.
I know. I can't help it. I tried really, really hard to talk myself into it, and I can't justify it. It's tough. Mm.
So speaking of Tesla, which is one of the most – that was a difficult transition. there was kind of a big breakthrough this week in Friday afternoon.
Really?
In solar cells, actually. This is a pretty big deal. One of the areas that people have really wanted to see advances in solar cells, you know, classic solar cell technology is you put a big old giant panel and you put it over like tons of land. Well, somebody came up with a brilliant idea, and this is a brilliant idea, where basically they said, why don't we just make a instead of like trying to capture all the light that's hitting the Earth as it hits it, let's put big old mirrors up there. And then, or lenses, and then focus the light from the sun onto a small solar cell.
Because which James Bond is that one? It's
Goldeneye.
No. It's not Die Another Day. It's the one.
I have no idea.
Whoa, my thing's like blowing up on me. It appears you are currently using ad blocking software. What are the consequences?
Wait, who's doing that?
I don't know. Oh, it's fizz.org. Yeah, jeez. I am ad blocking.
Yeah, go
sorry
ahead
for the inconvenience. Jeez. yeah, I had big, huge red banners come across.
That's funny.
It is. It is Die Another Day. I was right.
Nice.
With Halle Berry and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's the one where they got the whatever. It's the billionaire who kind of has this Elon Musk look about him, if you will, who never sleeps because life's too precious.
You see, that's the thing that about Elon Musk is, like, on one hand, he's totally got the Iron Man thing going on, the Tony Stark, but he's got just a little bit of the James Bond villain thing going on too.
Yeah.
Which makes it kind of exciting. You know what it is? It's the South African accent. Every time I hear it, I'm almost like,
Yeah,
I could see him turn evil.
which this guy, his whole thing was they created a solar thing, like you were talking about, that would be like opposite of the sun. And so the sun would hit it, and then they would focus it. And his whole thing was like, we can light up an area, or we can really concentrate it and blow up stuff.
They also did that in Batman and Robin when Mr. Freeze froze the city. That's how they thawed the city.
Yes, that's right.
Terrible movie.
Poison Ivy. I remember all of that.
Exactly.
And Bane, we'll put that in quotes, because it was nothing like the actual comic book character Bane, which, in all honesty, neither was he in the movie, but, you know, it was closer.
Yeah, but the Bane, you know, the Bane in The Dark Knight Rises was fantastic. I think I'm going to watch that tonight. I just made that decision.
So it's like the James Bond movie, huh?
Exactly. So, yeah, anyways, what we're getting back to, jeez, man. We're starting later. We're having a hard time staying on the rails.
Slightly more loopy. Okay.
So basically what they're doing is one of the big ideas has always been, you build the best solar panels in the world, you get the best, you make all this investment, and you put the panels out there. 5 years later, the technology has gotten exponentially bigger, better, and now you got to replace all these solar panels. It's ridiculous. So what they said was, how can we keep up with the technology and really take advantage of large areas of sunlight? Well, this became where the idea of putting mirror arrays that focus the light on a single small panel. So every time you build these more efficient panels, that more concentrated sunlight. And it was this really, and then and in order to take advantage of that, one of the ways that they were moving with the solar panels was to stack the solar panels together, and it allowed it to absorb more and more and more energy, and it was really cool. Except there was
one
problem.
And the reason why you would use the mirrors is because they're cheaper than just putting solar panels there.
A, they're cheaper, and B, you never have to upgrade them.
It's true.
They just
do a little spit shine.
Exactly.
Okay,
you make a capital investment on that one, and then all you have to do is upgrade. You know,
being reasonable about their costs and their expenses here, and you celebrate that. You don't need to make fun of me.
That's a good point. So what's cool about this is that one of the limitations for making these solar panels that can absorb tons of – because it's like there's two directions you go with solar panels. One is trying to capture as much of the light as possible, so get your efficiencies up. The other one is to be able to absorb a smaller percentage of a ton of light. That's the direction that this is going. And so it's like, yeah, we're not going to get to 100% efficiency, but we don't need to. We're just going to get, you know, we get 30% efficiency, but just a huge amount of concentrated light. Well, they were running into this problem where the material that they were using to glue the different solar panel stacks together was after a certain temperature, after a certain amount of light would come in, they would start to break down and siphon off voltage through like heat loss and different sources of loss. So there was this hard line of you could make these really efficient solar cells, glue them together, but even if you put more efficient solar cells on them, because of what you were using to bind them all together, they had like this, they could only get up to like 700 times the sunlight. And so Their goal is to get to about 4,000 to 5,000. That's where there's this magical, like, they can efficiently do that. They can manage it. It makes sense financially. So there's this big gap there. They want to be able to do up to 5,000 times sunlight, but they can only do about 700. And these guys announced just this the other week that they figured out how to do it. It's a gallium arsenic.
Sounds healthy.
Chemical, yeah. Honestly, as somebody who works in fabs on a semi-regular basis, there's a lot of arsenic going up in that place, man. It's kind of, arsenide, which is, it's got arsenic in it. And it's a.
I gather that much.
Yeah. And,
something to do with electrons and the counts of them changes the name.
Exactly. And so it's,
I didn't do very well in chemistry.
Yeah, you know what? Nobody did, except for the chemists. So the solar cell designers, they're using that thin film as the glue to keep them together, and what they're finding is there's no breakdown voltage or problem that they run into.
Problem solved.
Up until 70,000 times the sun, which is huge.
Back to the drawing board. Keep trying.
They're trying to get the 5,000. They can go up to 7,000. 70,000. So, quite a few factors bigger. Yeah. So it's a big deal. It's cool, and it means that it's not going to necessarily affect your Toyota Prius with solar cells. But what it will affect is it will affect the overall solar energy market. That's a huge deal for them. That'll make solar power way more affordable as time goes on.
Which, just for the record, I would love to put solar panels on my roof. I would spend money there, but I run into that same problem where I'm like, man, if I just wait 5 years, it'll be more efficient and cheaper,
I'm working on it. Yeah, at some point you gotta pull the trigger.
I like the idea of using mirrors, though.
Yeah, to focus the light.
Because then you, like you said, you do that capital expense, and then you do kind of, we will upgrade this every 5 years, and we get the same efficiency as if we had a bunch. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, pretty clever.
At first I thought that you were talking about, because these mirrors, they're not in space, right? Or are they? They're on the ground, right?
Yeah.
That'd be cool if we put them in space.
It would be very fun if we put it just as, create these giant laser beams. They actually, it's funny. That's how they do it in a, it's a common sci-fi, trope, actually, to do that. That's in the book, I, Robot, which the movie was loosely based off of, and by loosely, I mean it has the same title and nothing else in common. But they,
kind of reminds me of, Bane for Dark Knight Rises.
Exactly. Exactly. And they build these giant solar collectors out in space because there's no there's no interference. They get the direct sunlight.
Yeah.
And then they basically turn it into a laser and they shoot these lasers at Earth, and then the power plants on Earth, all they are is giant solar collectors that are designed to basically take lasers from space. It's freaking awesome, man. And then there's a problem where the robots take over and revolt against the humans, and it's like, oh, okay, it might, send the laser off beam, and then it'll destroy an entire city and kill millions of people. But because of the first law of robotics, where they can't hurt humans, they automatically adjust it, and so, it's cool. It's a good book. I recommend it. The movie is, a movie. And
I think it's a good movie.
Well, that's because you've never read the book. It's actually an enjoyable movie. It's just, the ending of the book is 180 degrees from the ending of the movie. They come to the exact opposite conclusion. In the movie, it's like this huge, terrible thing that the robots want to take over and protect us. And in the book, they're like, actually, they are better at making sure we don't kill ourselves than we are, so I guess we'll just go for that. What the heck?
Oh, way to just spoil the book. Now I'm not going to read it.
I know. I'm sorry. Stupid.
I wasn't.
Anyway.
It's okay.
I know. Anyways. Yeah, spoiler alert.
I'm trying to convince Jesse to read or listen to Ender's Game before we go see that movie. I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah. But, so I'm hoping that the movie is somewhere close to the book so I don't have to be like, oh, you have to listen to the book because it's, you know.
I get a feeling from what I've seen of the trailers, all the important stuff in the books in the movie.
Okay,
which good. Is kind of frustrating that they showed all that in the trailer.
Yeah, but I like to think that you don't know it unless you've
read the book. It's still, come on. I mean, I don't know.
I'm not going to let him watch any trailers.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
No spoilers. Yeah. What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Gallium. So, yeah. I do eventually want to talk about watches, but...
I'm going
to
say, well, this is the big thing. Okay, we're going to put off watches. We're going to talk about...
Yeah, we'll go in order.
Mondays first?
Yeah. Which, these guys are weird. I'm just going to put that out there. Microsoft announced that they will be acquiring Nokia.
Oh, baby.
Nokia's devices and services business, to be specific, which seems to imply that there's more to Nokia than
Which confuses me because I was unaware of that.
Don't they make phones or devices?
Yeah, I don't really know what's left over.
So Microsoft's buying that for what is it? $5 billion.
Boom.
Essentially. Yeah, it's just like I said, Microsoft's been doing some big moves recently, right? Like, we're getting rid of the CEO, what was the other one they just recently did? I feel like it was huge. I should know this.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead. Didn't they do something, like, 2 weeks ago?
We've been venting about what's his name stepping down. They're totally reorganizing. They're doing a reorg, which is one of their big things. They're discounting the prices on all the on all their tablets. I don't know.
I can't think of it. Which is okay. But anyways, Microsoft is now moving on to a huge acquisition.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's not.
It's not their biggest acquisition,
but it is big, for certain, and which is a little strange, being that Ballmer's essentially like on the way out, like, oh yeah, and we're buying them.
Yeah.
To which everyone's instant reaction was, oh, now we know who the next CEO is going to be.
Well, you know, and
solved, which I think, Stephen Alop? Is that how you would pronounce his name?
Yeah, that's how I always say. I always say Elope.
Elope. Well, anyways, so they were like, you know, oh, he's going to be it because now he's working under Microsoft again and, you know, as a VP. And, you know, it's kind of weird if you're like the CEO and now you're being a VP again.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Nokia was failing miserably. And under his leadership. And so you kind of get the impression like he would have been out of a job anyways
in
a couple of years. So, hey, cool. It was 7.25? Whatever. It's a chunk of change. He'll probably won't get it because he was in control of a failed company, essentially.
Well,
which people were like, what does Microsoft gain from buying Nokia when they locked up the fact that they were going to be selling Microsoft phones and, you know, had kind of formed that partnership. You know, so it was essentially like they were able to acquire Nokia without having to acquire them. They just had control. And, like, when people press Ballmer, like, dude, what are some of the synergies you're going to get? And he goes, well, I think we'll do a better job naming our phones. Really?
Yeah.
A, you don't buy a company so you can name it better. And B, I've seen some of Microsoft's names, and they're not that much better.
Well, so it's – I think it's
– I mean, that was in his interview. He literally said that was one of his reasons or one of the things, you know, benefits that they're going to get from buying each other. Really?
Yeah.
Really? I can see why you're on your way out, because that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. He's not the most impressive right now. I think what's interesting is one of the
kind of like, I don't even care. Whatever. We're buying them.
Well, so it's like, I think part of it is it's that whole center, it's that whole, it has to do with the whole reorg, because what was the point of the reorg? It's to give it very much an Apple top-down, you know, a single guy in charge with a vision, and everybody sort of reports to you, and, you know, the guy on top is involved in everything, which only really makes sense in a company that has, like, three products, like Apple, a company that has 18 different versions of its flagship product, probably can't manage that same thing, but, you know, whatever, they were going to give it a try. But I think part of it is just they want that vertical integration that Apple has. They want to be able to make decisions like that and just kind of move forward with it. And at this point, it's like they're trying not to submarine the, torpedo the Lumia sales. So it's like they don't want to talk bad about it and be like, well, actually, these are all the great ways that we can improve it right now because it's totally bad. You know, it's, they don't want to say that. They want to say, no, it's the best phone on the market, definitely. There's nothing that you can improve on it. And then all of a sudden they're going to start to improve it. I mean, I that to me is not shocking that they didn't come out and just say, you know, look, we think it can be done better. One of the interesting thing about speaking of torpedoing is if you remember, man, back a couple years back, early in when we started doing this show, Stephen Elop, whatever his name is, the CEO of Nokia. He wrote that big big P, or it's like an internal memo
where he basically
said, you know, like we're on a burning oil rig, like, you know. Losses and jump off, and that was when they cut their Mego or whatever it was, their mobile.
Yeah, which as a general rule, if you do that, you like to land somewhere better. And
right,
well
and it was like they weren't going to launch a Microsoft phone for like 8 months, and he announced it, and it destroyed sales. It was just terrible. It was like, you never say that sort of a thing. Why did you say that? And it's like, you know,
that's classic Microsoft, though, man.
Right. Well, the thing is,
all that stuff.
I know, but it was like a. So I think one of the things that's interesting here is that the Finns are furious. The people, obviously, it's a socialist company, your country.
Oh,
so
that's
like,
right, huh? I forgot about that.
Yeah, so the government is cool with it. They're letting it happen because the right people got paid.
Which I remember they were like, one good thing about this is it gives Microsoft a way to spend their money without having to repatriate it and pay taxes on it.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Finnish people are furious, and part of the reason is because when Elop got hired to be the CEO of Nokia, one of the conspiracy theories was that Microsoft wanted to buy Nokia eventually. So they hired this dude who's a former Microsoft shill, and his job was basically to tank Nokia until they had a low enough value that Microsoft could afford to buy them, because when he joined, they couldn't afford to buy the company. And then like his prize for doing that would be to become CEO of Microsoft eventually, which is freaking everybody out because that's exactly what's happened. And it's like, guys, like you're not supposed to be this transparent when you're, you know, purposefully torpedoing a company and bringing it down in order to make it more effective or affordable for a hostile takeover. And the biggest thing here is it's like they're not even going to keep the name Nokia. They're going to I'm actually glad. That is such a stupid way to pronounce it. It just drives me nuts. Every time I say it, it bothers me. And
I've forgotten. I appreciate you reminding me.
Every time, like when we're out, I'm, all of the time I'm calling it, oh man, you got the Nokia Lumia 920, and they're like, and I was like, that's not what they call it, man.
That's not the way the Finns say it.
Jeez. But they're, you know, part of the branding issue, part of the renaming thing, is that after the Lumia series, which who knows how long they're going to keep the Lumias going, they will not be called Nokia phones anymore. They'll be Microsoft phones. And so they'll come up with their new name, whatever that is.
It'll be better.
A new,
better name.
Yeah. And, and it'll be called the Microsoft phone, and it'll have a little
with
window on the back.
With Windows Phone 8 Pro.
Yeah, jeez. Crazy yeah. Kids. Not Metro style, because the one time they actually came up with a good name, they didn't bother to make sure it was legal.
Yeah, it's almost. They're weird like that.
They're not weird like that.
So you think this is going to work out?
Like that.
Do you think? Well, it's one of those where you could tell they let the engineers name it, and it was awesome. And they're like, "Oh, this is pretty cool," and they just kind of forgot to do the whole due diligence thing.
Yeah. Like I said, dysfunctional.
Which I think part of it was, I don't think they actually, did they officially announce that it was Metro at the time? I feel like
no.
It leaked somewhere along the lines, and it just kind of got adopted.
Yeah, I think it was just like an internal name. They were calling it that.
I just get that impression. Yeah. So the question really is, do you think this is going to work out? Do you think that this is a good move and, you know, they'll be able to shore up Nokia, which, they, you know, they gave them, you know, whatever it was, some, you know, they gave them some money to pay financial debts or something right away. But, you know, here are two companies that are kind of struggling to make it happen. In some ways, they were lone wolves supporting each other on this, we'll call it an ecosystem for now. You know, and now they're obviously pulling together really tight in the midst of a CEO transition. You know, acquisitions themselves are always, we talk about how they're slow and they take a lot of time to do right, especially of these sizes. I mean, Microsoft's taken on another 32,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot. And I'm just getting out of here. And so, you know, you take on a lot more people, which has certain ramifications. I don't feel like this is going to work out, as you can obviously tell by the laundry list of things I'm putting together. Do you think they'll come out stronger and better, actually make good products, you know, in the next 4 years?
I'm gonna qualify it and say.
I mean, because you think about like I'll cut you off.
Okay.
You know, because you think about Google buying Motorola. Motorola was already kind of, you know, they were doing the Droid thing, similar deal, right? They had some good patents, which were nice. But they were struggling financially, but they were already, like you talked about, burned the ships on the other stuff and were fully sold into the Android ecosystem. And it still took them a really, really long time before they even came out with their first Google-based phone. And even then, they're kind of like, yeah, I haven't seen anything yet. Just wait.
Well, I would say this. I'd say Nokia is in a better place than
Motorola.
Thank you. Nokia is in a better place than Motorola was. Because Motorola they came out with like the Razr phone and that was like their big deal. And when the changeup happened, it was like, I don't know, the momentum was lost and you were putting it in the hands of somebody who had never, you know, in the hands of a company that had absolutely zero experience with hardware, taking over one of the biggest hardware companies in the world, you know, and as much as Microsoft has never made a computer before, they've been manufacturing Xboxes like crazy for the last decade.
It's true.
So it's, you know, they've got all five of them. That's right. They've got the infrastructure of management to be able to move in and understand what it takes to manufacture a phone, I think. And so I don't think you'll see quite the same disruptive, you know, bounce. And they're going to stick with the Lumias. And it's like they got a couple Lumias, you know, the 1020, I think, is – I don't actually know if the 1020 has been launched yet. The 40 megapixel one, though. But that's right on the precipice. They've got another one that they announced, like a 6-inch one that's got like – it's a ridiculously big and huge and looks kind of cool that they just announced this week.
Fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. And, that one's, you know, so it's like they've got products in the works that are coming through, and I'll bet they've got one or two beyond that. And basically what's going to happen is that the first Microsoft phone is going to be a Lumia phone that gets, you know, completely branded as a Microsoft phone.
Yeah. Just change the logo.
Exactly. Okay. And so I don't think you're going to see that same huge hiccup because they can't afford it. I mean, it's not like Google where, you know, Motorola stopped manufacturing phones for a year, but nobody was buying Motorola phones anyway, so who cared? It wasn't like it was the death of the platform.
One could say the same thing about the Lumias.
Well, except, but... I mean, it is the only, you know, Microsoft phone being sold. So it's like, you know, HTC has got, they've got Windows phones, but they're, you know, they're...
Do you think this is going to incentivize HTC to be like, all right, now we're getting back into the Windows game.
I think this is going to drive them even further.
That's not what Ballmer said. He said instead it will open up opportunities for other OEMs to come
that's
in.
That's ridiculous.
So
that's ridiculous. That doesn't even he's such a.
Well, they said that about the Surface, right? They're like, the Surface. We're going to show OEMs how it's done so that they can then go and innovate on top of what we show them as possible.
That was the biggest catastrophe in that perspective, because it's like not only did it instantly stop all the other OEMs from like trying to build Metro tablets, but it's like this is supposed to show people how to do it. So the idea was that they'll make a bunch of money and everybody like excited, and then they'll be they may decide to move on at first, not go for it, but at least after that they'll realize how great you can do it, and they'll start to compete because it'll be this really valuable market. And not only did no OEMs make one to begin with because they didn't want to compete with Microsoft, but then it was just such a floundering failure. And it's like, wow, you guys are terrible at what you do. And it's crazy. It's just, it's nuts. And I think at this point they don't have any intention of having real competition in their market. I think they're going to try to build Microsoft phones and just call it good.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think this hurts or helps the chances of BlackBerry getting bought by Microsoft?
It's done, dude. It's done.
Microsoft. I know for me in personal, when I get on a buying spree, you know, I buy one thing, it often leads to a second or third.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, man. You get your Mac Mini and you got to buy a second 27-inch monitor. Why? Because you need two.
It's mostly food related. I find if I buy one thing for food, then I'm like, oh, I should buy something else. I don't know why. It's weird. I don't go out to eat just once. I'll do a couple in a row.
Yeah, I get that.
But I could see that with Microsoft. Oh, buy one tech company and buy two. What's the difference?
Well, except
how's that go in the movie? Why build one when you could build two for twice the price?
That is my favorite line from Contact. I quote that to this day. Why buy one when you can buy two for twice the price? Oh, man. That's such a great scene.
Great logic.
Yeah. Oh, well, one of the things that I think is going on here is it's like, so this kind of goes to your bigger question of, you know, is this going to work out for Microsoft?
Yeah.
My initial response is they have to keep manufacturing phones. They can't have a hiccup. It'd be terrible if they did. Long term, 5 years, is this going to work for them? It really depends on who replaces Ballmer. Ballmer's in charge? No, it'd be horrible.
That's true.
Ballmer is going to set up the next guy with a pretty cool tool, though. It's one of those things where he just gave him the ability to manufacture phones. You get somebody in there that kind of knows what they're doing and has a vision and can get the management online with that, it's possible that you might see a real, you know, it's possible that you could really see something cool come out of Microsoft, in the next 5 years. But it entirely depends on, you know, who's in charge and what direction they're leading them. You know, one of the things that everybody keeps complaining about is the fact that Skype doesn't come standard on your Windows phones. It's not like iMessages, which is integrated into flipping everything. You can't buy an Apple product without it, and it all talks together. Why is it not the case with Skype at this point? It's like they've got this great tool, and it's an awesomely competitive, you know, thing. Build it into the text messaging app so that if somebody has a Skype, it automatically does that, you know, and it pushes all of your conversations to all of you. Like, so many things they can do and they don't. It's just a classic Microsoft thing to do. Is they're like, you know, it's like they're still afraid of being, you know, dragged to court as a for antitrust stuff, you know, because of abusing their monopoly. But it's like, number one, don't abuse it. Number two, you have to have a monopoly if you had any intention of abusing it, and you don't. So it's like there's nothing holding them back really legally from doing that. It's just an engineering thing and a marketing thing, and they it's like they don't even have any interest in doing it. You sit there and you go, if that's what they're going to do with Nokia, where it's just going to be another division that's completely separate from the Windows Phone division, which is completely separate from the Skype division, which is completely separate from your Xbox gaming division, and there's no real, they don't leverage all of these different, they don't have games that are like cross-platform, and they don't have, and they don't really get into the Xbox Live ecosystem with it, and because they're trying to do that with Windows Phone, they're doing a better job than they were before, but it's like nobody's really taking advantage of it though. And if they don't get to the point where they can actually leverage all of these different tools, it'll just be a boondoggle, it'll be a waste of money. Why'd you do that? And that's the question. That is the single question is, okay, you've got all the pieces there, the puzzle, you've got all the pieces of the puzzle. Now, can you actually put it together in a timely manner in such a way that ends up with a compelling product? That's one of the things that the Steve Jobs Apple team was so brilliant at, was you had all these different pieces and they were able to stitch together in a compelling product with a cool packaging and an interesting commercial, and people go out and go crazy to buy it, and they make those, and it's not like Microsoft doesn't have brilliant engineers. They do. They just don't have direction or vision or leadership or anything that would be required in order to actually put the whole package together. And the thing is, if this had been done in reverse order, where if Ballmer had announced him stepping down after this, I'd say no, terrible decision. It's not going to work out for him. Now that there's at least a chance. Could Steven do it? Probably not. I actually don't buy into the conspiracy theory that he intentionally sank Nokia in order to get it bought by Microsoft. I think that was a fortuitous circumstance given complete mismanagement of a formerly great company.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you were to ask him, he'd be like, honestly, I'd love them to be super successful, and we're not even talking about it, because their success means they're selling a ton of phones, and that would have been the ideal outcome.
Right.
And it didn't happen, so we'll do plan B.
Right. Which, you just sit there and I go, I would agree with you as well. I'd agree that Steven would make a terrible CEO of Microsoft, but who would make a better one? I don't know. Marissa Mayer. Somebody was like, they should get Johnny Ives to be CEO of Microsoft. Yeah. That guy hates working. They had to pay him so much to keep him around because he wanted to retire like 5 years ago.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah, because he wanted to go back to England and live in England again. And they were like, how about this? How about we let you work from England halftime and we quadruple your salary? And he was like, okay.
Okay.
Now they're giving him, they're basically giving him the keys to the country. He's got more influence over the direction of Apple than Tim Cook at this point. And, so it's like,
I
don't know.
So I think it's about time we chat about Samsung's announcement.
What announcement?
Yeah.
So, okay, first things first. Did it make you regret your Kickstarter investment?
No.
No.
And there are about 300 reasons why.
There are that many, yes. So let's talk about it. What did they do?
So Samsung unveiled the Galaxy Gear, which we talked about. It's a 1.63-inch AMOLED touchscreen.
Nice.
So it's got color, it's got touch. It has a cool little camera built into the wristwatch areas to take really low-res, garbagey photos. It's 1.9 megapixel.
Well, it's not for that. It's for communicating. Helper, I need you to come over.
You can also do 10-second 720p video.
10 seconds, nice.
10 seconds.
Just enough for a Vine.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. What else? Talks to your phone via Bluetooth. It's only like, it only goes with a couple. What is it? It's the Note 3.
Yeah.
And then they're going to add a couple more later on. As I hinted at earlier, it is $300.
That is expensive.
Yep, yep. It's got 4 gigabytes of storage, 512 of RAM. It's got a processor, which means nothing to me. Oh, so it's a 320 by 320 pixel screen, I guess, to put that 1.63 into perspective. Oh, and it launches with 70 apps, which I thought was interesting.
There's a lot of apps. I'll give them this. The screen looks nice.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, it's so ugly and junky and huge. I'm like, whatever.
Everything.
G-Shock, come on.
Everything, well, yeah. But I mean, so this is one of the big problems is it's the tastefulness of the device. That is the big,
suddenly matters. Question. Yeah.
And we've talked about this. So it's like, the style with your watch is such a huge deal. Not everybody has the same watch, and I think that's the biggest thing that Apple's going to run into with their watch is it's like, it'll be the best, classiest looking watch out there, but and from a tech perspective, or that's how they'll sell it at least. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree and everybody's going to want that specific style. What Apple has to, who knows what Apple will do with it. Yeah. But I think what's interesting about this is it's like this was not designed to sell, like period, point blank.
Someone they called it. It's a what kind of purchase was it? It's a wow. I'm really struggling. What was it?
Mm-hmm.
It was like an aspirational purchase, is what they called it.
Yeah.
Which this idea of like they're like you would never buy it unless you just wanted to be that person.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I look at this is I take a look at this watch and I think, number one, it's $300. It's as much as the phones you're buying. Yeah, granted, it's not subsidized, but, you're going to, and in a lot of cases, you're going to spend more.
Because, we really care about the non-subsidized costs.
I know. You're gonna spend more on the watch than you are on the phone. Like that's crazy. But the real problem that I have, and I I'm not particularly in love with the style. But if it were functional and it looks good enough, okay. Screen looks pretty nice. But the thing that's just ridiculous. This is just crazy. I can't even conceive of how they let this get out of R&D. Thing won't last a day under moderate usage.
Yes.
The battery dies. Not only does it absolutely have to be charged every day, but you can't actually use it all day.
May not actually make it all day.
It's like, and so this did bring up an interesting question.
If it had to be charged at night, okay, whatever, big deal.
But at least
you just get in a habit. Let it go like. 30 hours or something.
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, we can make it a day, no problem, but you'll need to charge it at night, trust me.
Right. Well, it's actually, so this is the interesting question I was going to ask, was how long does the battery have to last before it would become, how long, what is the minimum bar for you on how long your watch has to last?
For me, I mean, it's got to last a day under heavy usage.
Okay. How long does the Pebble last for you?
Six
days.
Yeah, which honestly is actually kind of weird. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Because it goes so long, I find that I do forget to check.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my watch is dead. I guess I'll charge it. Because I don't, if it were 7 days, at least I'd be like, oh, it's Sunday night, time to charge my watch. Right. I'd make it that habit because it's this random six.
It's not the same time every day.
Yeah, I gotta make my own watch face so I can just solve this problem. But they have a battery indicator.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's like, it only shows up. It doesn't show up on the actual watch face, so you can't see that. You have to go into the menu system, and then it'll only show up telling you like it's low once it's low. So I can't, I just look at it and I'm like, well, I don't see it, so I guess there's more than 50% or more than 25%. You know, and I think it's like once it shows up, they're like, you've got, I think they're like, you've got 24 hours of battery life left or something like that.
Well, it's funny, the Fitbit is similar in that it like, it's very hard to tell what the actual battery life is until it's basically like, it's nearly dead, charge it now. You're like, oh, yeah. And I think it's 24 hours as well once you get to that, once you hit that point.
I've had it twice so far where like a notification will go off on my phone. I'm like, oh, that's weird. It didn't go off on my watch. And I'll look at my watch. Oh, because it's dead. Yeah. There we go. And I'll throw it on a charger for, you know, 20 minutes or whatever, and it's good to go for the rest of the day minimum. And if I leave it on for an hour, I'm good to go for the next 6 days. You know, so it's not like, and since I've worked from home, whatever, no big deal. I'm sure if I were out on the road a lot, that would be a pain in the butt. But all that to say, you know, if it was like, I got to charge it every day, and that's part of, you know, because I plug my phone in at night, mostly because I'm running some weird alarm app that makes me shake the phone and I turn it off in the morning. And so it's got to be on because, you know, the Apple and their whole thing. You know, and if right next to it, I also was charging my watch. And it would, if it were like a touchstone type thing where you just lay it on top.
That would be pretty cool.
Pretty awesome. But I was so it's one of those where it's like, yeah, the battery life is definitely a non-starter, especially for 300 bones. You're like, come on, really? You know, give me a good battery or something. At that point, it is just a novelty style purchase. It does use the Bluetooth LE4O, which is nice, you're still going to take a battery hit on your phone, but whatever. But I've been reading more stuff, you know, and there was some stuff with the Pebble, and now this one, it starts to get closer in the sense that it's got the touch, and you can start phone calls, or you can have non-private phone calls because it has a microphone in it, you know, so you can do speakerphone type stuff. But I've been trying to think, like, or I should just say, I'll back up. I also read this other article where it was just like, smartwatches are dumb.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, there's no space for them. It's all novelty, you know, whatever. And their whole thing was like, it's going to be the glasses. It's really where it's going to make sense. Because they were like, you know, it's just, it gives you passive notification, and that's it. And, you know, like, you know, with a 1-inch screen or even a 2-inch monstrosity on your wrist, they're like, you know, it's just not enough to really do anything. And so it's just it's a waste of money. Just save up and get the Google Glasses type thing. Which I thought was really, like, narrow-minded in a way to think about it. But it also made me think, like, okay, if I had a watch, you know, which I – or, you know, I have one. But if I were making up a watch that could do anything, what would that actually look like? You know, and one of them, like I said, obviously longer battery life would be nice. I could do, if I had to charge it once a day, you know, if it lasted 30 hours type thing, which meant it could get me through an entire day of heavy usage, that would be cool. Or at the very least, just be like, hey, low battery, we're turning off all functions except for the absolutely required ones, like the time.
Right.
Because we're going to assume you want that. Or, you know, I can choose whatever. You know, so there's that part of it. I definitely would like more sensors in it. I don't even remember what sensors they have. I'm guessing for certain. Well, they got a microphone. I know that.
It's got none of the passive, like, biometric stuff. It's got,
does it have that?
It's got
that,
a mic. It's got a camera. And it doesn't. That's part of what's, like, so confusing. It's, like, it's become clear in the last couple of months that Apple's iWatch is going to be less watch and more biometric scanner than anything. Like, it's and I guarantee you it'll last more than a day because they want you to sleep with it and want you to be able to track your sleep, you know, and like you would with a Fitbit.
It'd be nice if you got to the point where it was like, well, you're taking your shower, you charge it. You know, you know, that's how long it takes or something. I mean, that'd be awesome. I don't think it'll get to that point. I was also thinking, like, So having some sort of biometrics would be cool. But then it's like they talk about the interaction with it. Obviously, voice communication would be a good one. I could see, like, with the, what is it, the Samsung one where they do the gestures where, like, you don't actually have to touch the phone screen. It's got a little camera that's watching for it. So I could see where it's like, you know, you've got your watch and you're flipping through stuff or selecting things by not actually touching your watch, so you don't have to worry about that. You know, so accuracy is a little less important. But then, here's where I had the crazy thought, and I was like, yes, this would be so awesome, is if it did like the 3D little pop-up hologram thing, and you're like, yes, kind of like what Elon Musk was showing with his thing. I'm like, and then I can rotate the dial to call people 1-0 all the way around, 9-8. I could use my rotary phone to call people.
That's sort of a Scott Forstall little motif right there, going back to the rotary dial.
That's true. Which you can dial numbers on this, which I'm like, yeah, that's kind of weird. Some sort of 3D thing, and then it can expand, right? And I'm like, all right, cool. I can use my whole hand. Green thing.
I think one of the things that goes on here, and it's funny, I think it's the question that everybody keeps asking is, why would I need something on my wrist when I have something in my pocket already?
And or the potential of something on my face.
Right. And the example and the response I've always given is, you know what, I think honestly having something on your face could make sense. I think there's definitely a battery issue there that's going to take a while to kind of overcome.
Social stuff too.
Yeah, I think the watch is the path of least resistance on power and social interactions. I think it makes sense as a stepping stone. But the thing I keep coming back to is we all had wristwatches for a century. Those overcame pocket watches. Pocket watches were popular before wristwatches. Why did we as a society go from the pocket watch to the wristwatch?
We're lazy bums.
Exactly.
Like,
that's my thing.
But I've actually really, really, really liked that ability. I say it over and over, where it's like I'll be having dinner with Jesse and someone will text me, oh, got it. Moving on. I can focus on the conversation. I don't offend anybody. I can look real quick, or I'll get my AP news alert or my ESPN score update. Boom. Look. Move on.
And I sit there and I go, it seems like, is it going to be worth a couple $100? Maybe over time. But is a biometric scanner that will also like update you all your information right there without having to pull the phone out? Does that suddenly become worth 200, 300 bones?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, probably. Okay. I'm more willing to say that. And I think that's all Apple is going to try to do, is try to make a biometric scanner with the
Do you think it would make sense to I'm going to say untether it from the phone or tablet? Either Wi-Fi or, you know, Bluetooth, or not a Bluetooth, but a 4G chip in it.
No, I don't think it makes sense at this stage to have a 4G antenna in it. Maybe Wi-Fi, but I really do think that if everything it does scanning-wise is passive, it does it with or without a phone around. That has a huge advantage. It's got a couple of functionalities that it can do. It can take a picture. It can, you know, it can tell you the time, whatever. It can do the basic, you know, I don't know why I would take a picture. But if it can tell the time while scanning without a phone, I think that has a certain value, and I'd keep it with me when I don't bring my phone with me, which is very rare.
I just keep mine on if I don't have my phone near me.
Right, yeah. And I'm not inclined to think that it necessarily makes sense, because I still do think that, you know, for most of your heavy usage stuff that you're going to be doing, your heavy lifting with your mobile device, you're still going to want a phone or a tablet. I don't foresee an area or a time when I'm going to use it for anything more than notifications and measuring my steps, you know, or whatever, and hopefully my heart rate. That's the one I want. But you know, I don't foresee a time where you'd see a huge advantage to.
I know a lot of the running apps or watches have GPS built into them.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
Along with heart rate measures and stopwatches and all that. I don't know. I could see it's a convergence. You make a multi-purpose, general purpose device, similar to the iPad as opposed to an e-reader. And you're like, yeah, it kind of does it all. Okay. Yeah, and I could see where, I wonder if it'll ever get to a point similar to like an iPad or iPhone, or, you know, we'll just go general, smartphone or tablet, where they don't really depend on each other, but they can definitely communicate, and if you have one, there's value there. I just wonder if you'll ever be able to get away from that with a watch. Part of it's probably just dependent on technology, right? How much stuff can they fit into that small little case?
What have I told you that I want? What I want is basically a Wi-Fi hotspot that straps to my wrist and tells me the time and I can play music from. And then that hotspot will power my phone, will power my tablet, or not my phone. It won't be a phone. It'll power my, you know, handheld device, my iPod Touch, and it'll power my iPad, and it'll power my computer, and it'll power my watches. Like, it'll just, you know, it's essentially just a beacon with, like, limited input-output functionality. That is my ideal. That's what I want. I'd much rather have the situation reversed. I'd rather have the 4G antenna on my watch and with Wi-Fi, and so I can tether stuff, and then my phone be the without the 4G. Mm. Yeah, that's my ideal. That's where I'd like us to go, but that's a mess of a power situation. I mean, the reason why the iPhone works is because it's big enough to hold a big enough battery, you know? I think you're a long ways off before you'll be able to get to that point. But I sit there and I go, eventually, yeah, I'd want to get rid of my phone. I don't want that in my pocket all the time.
What if Apple figures out they put the batteries in like each individual link on your strap? And, you know, if you're a girl, your battery doesn't last quite as long. Sorry.
I could see. Well, I don't know. I think they're going to come up with all sorts of cool different things to.
What if they use kinesthetic movement, you know? You move, it charges it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to someone about that. Like, doesn't it already exist for watches? It's like, well, I had to do some research because I didn't know it, and it does for analog or
mechanical watches. They're mechanical flywheels.
Yeah. Digital is kind of a different beast, but...
Yeah. Well, it kind of, except not really. I mean, you'd have to turn that mechanical power into energy, into electrical energy, but same principle. But nobody's done that yet. It's a mess, kind of.
So are you, when are you getting your Galaxy Gear, man?
I am not going to get a Galaxy Gear because I don't own a Galaxy phone. And
time you made a choice there.
See, guess what decision I just made? Not getting a Galaxy. I don't like Samsung's,
You don't have to. You have to because you'd have to get the Note or whatever it is.
Right, exactly. And, you know, honestly, whatever. And that's what's so stupid is the only reason this happened, the entirety, the long and short of it was they didn't want Apple to say we did it first and that Samsung's just copying us. That way Samsung can say, our second generation watch looks exactly like the iWatch because we had ours first and that's the direction we were going to go, obviously, but we were first. You know, it's just a we were first thing. That's it. And it's such a, I don't know. It compromises in all the wrong places. It's crazy.
They're crazy. Nuts. They're nuts. That's okay. That's all right. I don't regret my purchase. I'm still waiting to see. I think there's room for improvement. But yeah. I'm happy with mine. I think it's cool. I like it.
That's good.
I don't regret my decision to get it.
I wouldn't. I think the 6-day battery life is pretty wicked.
Yeah, black and white's fine for now. For now. It's okay. I wouldn't mind having a touchscreen and being able to reply to text messages, even pre-canned responses, but that's And then, and maybe it had a little tagline, an email from your phone, you could do a little tagline, sent from mobile.
Yeah.
So they know it's supposed to be a terse response. Do that same thing with the watch, right? Just like, sent from Pebble. Just like, okay.
Sent from Pebble.
Sent from Pebble.
Yeah.
Just like, yes, that way you know it's like one or two word response. That'd actually be very awesome. I would have that tag on messages, either emails or phone calls. That would actually be pretty cool with a phone call too. Just send them a robot or, you know, whatever, a computer voice message replying for me. That'd be cool.
You mean like a message machine?
No. Like someone calls, someone calls me, right?
Yeah.
And I guess you send them a text message, but if I like, I can't pick up or I like, or I listen to it somehow magically. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Got it. I can just send the voicemail reply where it's, you know, you've had that where like some sort of congressman calls you up and they're like, this call is from Congressman so-and-so asking you to support us and send us money and vote, you know, like that. But it would just be like,
I don't actually know how that conversation
from
ends.
James Furlough. Yeah, me neither. I was like, yep, and hang up. Anyways, I don't know the point of that. But
well, it's funny. I mean, literally during the pre-show, I got to do that. Got a phone call and texted, you know, and the iPhone's got the little thing where you like flip it up and it gives you like two canned responses and a custom, and you hit the custom and type it in, and it hangs up on the
person.
You
know, you can customize the canned responses, right?
Yeah, I do know that.
Or you could do what I do, which is say I'm in a meeting, call you back when it's done, and then forget to do that.
Yeah.
That's pretty regular for me.
Actually, I guess the only time I ever really take advantage of that is during the show, and it's always somebody inevitably calls right in the middle of the show, and I always just flip back with podcast. No, so I probably could do that.
There you go. Yeah, no, all of my meetings are over the phone, so it happens.
Yeah.
To me. Yeah.
Cool.
So what's next?
So Tuesday's going to be exciting.
Yeah, what's happening Tuesday?
Apple is going to make an announcement about...
And more importantly, do I have this... I don't want an advertisement. Who cares? Let's see here. Let me make sure this is blocked out. That's Tuesday the 10th. What time does it start?
10.
I have a meeting from 10 to 11. This is lame.
Bummer December.
Are they live streaming it? Because that could really significantly impact my... if I attend or not. See how many people will be showing up to say seven. I could skip that easy.
As I say, that's the perfect number because it's not so big where it's like an important meeting, but it's not so small that you'll be missed. It's like perfect.
Yeah, actually, the bigger ones are the better. You know, where there's like 50 people on the phone call, you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
they just slotted a time. They didn't even check to see if I was available.
Exactly.
So I'm now busy, but now I'll be relegated to the blogs, and I'll quote pay attention.
Yeah, me too. So they're gonna announce the iPhone 5S with the fingerprint scanner. One of the reasons that I wanted to bring this up is, you know, I tend to try to resist the temptation to, you know, talk rumors only, but I do like to make predictions.
Try is a relative word.
I do like to make predictions, and the prediction that I've made for the last year and a half was that the NFC wasn't necessary. What you needed was Bluetooth 4.0, and that's why every iPhone for the last two generations has had Bluetooth 4.0 built in.
Crushing the dreams of some phone accessory makers, man.
Oh, no. But the thing is that it's like, you know,
I don't think you fully know how many dreams you're crushing right now.
Why?
I'm just saying.
Whose dreams am I crushing?
There's just certain companies out there who would really like to see that tech take off.
Certain companies?
Yeah.
Any specific names?
You would recognize it if you heard it.
Does it rhyme with
Hewlett
Deckard?
I neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, no, NFC's not happening. It's definitely going to be
Bluetooth. Yeah.
For all their new, oh, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's a low-powered, near-range, quick communication. It does everything that NFC does, except it's a standard protocol.
Maybe Phil Schiller was doing a Steve Jobs where he was making fun of people having to touch their phones, which I was like, wow, that's big, to share. You know, the way Steve Jobs is like, nobody reads anymore, which is why we're coming out with iBooks.
Yeah, I got a feeling
like people hate tapping each other, which is why we're coming out with NFC. I could see it. He's just channeling his, the ghost of Jobs.
Is the inner Steve Jobs? I don't think that's the case at all, James. I don't know. This doesn't make any sense. But what's so exciting about
this article that we read a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I get it.
What's so exciting about this is that it's like finally my day where it's just like, this is what I'm good at, people. This is my gift. I can tell you where the technology is going way before it happens. And it's like, this is kind of like when back in the day when I predicted the iPod Touch would take off as a gaming platform, like long before anybody else was saying it. And then it did. And Apple like made commercials about it. And I was like, gosh, I wish anybody had recorded me so I could like point with proof.
So then what's the point of the finger sensor then? I still don't fully get that.
Essentially, what's going to happen, my guess is that it's going to be kind of like a, certain functions will not work without the scanner being. Yeah, it's a security thing. It's essentially nobody can steal your phone and use it as a and use your credit card that's connected to it.
So lame.
Now, why is that lame? Because you won't get that functionality because you're not going to buy an iPhone 5S.
No, that's solely enterprise focused, and who cares?
What?
Well, it's an enterprise feature. That's not consumer.
What do you mean?
I mean that's something that's why corporations and big companies who care about a lot of security, they'll be the ones who are interested in that.
No. Because what's going to happen is you're going to be able to buy groceries.
I like this. Disagreement's good.
And say you're going to be able to buy groceries from the store.
You might be able to, but that won't be the use case.
Well, but that's what they're.
All the enterprise.
You're not at first. Yeah, I agree.
What matters at first? You're talking what 10 years
about?
From now?
No, I'm talking like a year and a half.
When NFC's finally.
See, that's the thing. It won't use NFC. It's going to use. Oh, what the heck are you talking about, James? See, the thing is it's like right now I can go into an Apple store and buy a $300 product off the shelf without talking to anybody as long as I know my iTunes password, right? That's how it works right now. You can buy stuff directly through iTunes, and which is cool, except if somebody steals my phone and they know my password, all of a sudden they can, buy $300 stuff, and there's nothing that I can do to stop them because they've got my information. Now, listen, what they're going to say is, no, you're perfectly safe. You do not be afraid to tether the unlimited access to your bank account to your physical device because nobody can steal your information. It doesn't matter. And if they have the phone, it doesn't do any good because it's tied to your unique fingerprint. And
so you think in addition to the finger sensor, they're coming out with an app or API or something like that where they'll be able to – I've got to think about how this would work. You will be able to tie either your iTunes account or some other credit card, because they're not going to try to reinvent the credit card thing. Square is already proving you don't have to. Or maybe that's the kind of API protocol thing. I'm just trying to think, how would they, make that easy so your finger essentially verifies who you are? I see it as a security play.
I'll tell you what's going to happen.
I see it not happening.
I'm going to tell you how it's going to work. And it's going to blow your mind. This is going to be the initial sell. You're going to go to a farmer's market. Farmer is going to have an iPad. You're going to walk up to your iPad, and you're going to connect to – you're going to Bluetooth AirDrop to their device. It's going to come up. They're going to say your fruit's going to cost you $5. Your device is going to come up with a $5 total. You're going to hit OK.
Right. How is that going to work? Is that like a specific app, or is that all through iTunes, some API?
It's gonna be the credit card.
Is that gonna work through Square?
It'll be an iPhone. It'll be part of iOS. It'll just be part of iOS. It'll be part of their whole AirDrop.
So somewhere along the lines, I'll update my credit card information onto my phone?
Yep.
Or I'll take a picture of it at least, and it'll interpolate it for me?
Yep. And chances are, I'll bet for the first time they'll allow you to have multiple credit cards and whatnot, because people use different credit cards for different stuff. And so it'll give you the option. Do you want to use this credit card? Do you want to use this debit card? Do you want to use blah, 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 blah? And you'll select the one, and then you'll put your – and then in order to actually – do the transaction, you have to put your thumb to the home button, and it'll scan your thumb, and if it's you, it'll charge, and if it's not, it won't. And they'll say, it's even more secure than credit card. We're doing credit cards the way credit cards should have been done all along, because somebody can't, you know, somebody can just steal your credit card. This is actually safer than a credit card. That's what they're going to say. And it's going to start out working just with, you know, pay for apps like, and they'll probably team up with Square or PayPal or somebody like that to do, you know, to do part of the back end on that. I wouldn't surprise me at all. But it's, you know, it's going to be designed specifically where it's going to be designed for on the onset transactions, financial transactions, iPhone, iPad. It won't be you know, Safeway at first. Safeway will have a longer tail on it. It'll take them a couple of years to get around to it. And they're just going to say, do Bluetooth, and these are the API calls that you're going to want to make. And all of a sudden your iPhone will be able to, you know, you'll be able to do self-checkout with your iPhone.
So I'm going to, this will be fun for Tuesday, because I'm going to just disagree with you.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with, I think it's going to be mostly a corporate security play.
Right.
You could see that in the future, I guess. I don't know if they're ready to do that yet, or if they want to even. But that's just me. Well, you watch them; they're getting away from the physical goods. That's not where they're trending. You know, they're doing all digital stuff, and they're getting away from physical media significantly. And so, I don't know.
All right. Oh, fine. Okay. Whatever.
Okay.
That's cool.
We can find out on Tuesday. That'll be the fun part.
But the action, the more fun.
Watch them not come out with it at all, and then we'll.
I know. Yeah. It's not even. There's not even going to be a finger scanner. We're like, but.
Great.
What about authentic?
Which will further resolve my resolution to not want to buy it, unless it's like a haptic or 3D screen, in which case I might have to reconsider my.
That would be a pretty big deal. No, but
because so if you add it, because I'm like, you know, the only thing that would really capture my attention would be like a new sensor, which again, this is a, you know, we're thinking 5S, right? And so you think like upgrade of all the internals, and like it's all new phone, all new again, times three, you know, and so it's, you know, whatever. But I'm like, you know, if they could add another type of sensor that allows the phone to do something that's fundamentally different, okay, that's interesting, but you know. I just don't see that happening this time
around.
That's fair enough.
We'll see you on Tuesday. The big question that I have is, are they going to announce the iPhone 5C on Tuesday?
Are they
going to wait until Wednesday? Because less than 24 hours, they have another giant press conference thing planned in their plan for China. And so the big question is, are they just going to redo all of their announcements from Tuesday on Wednesday, where they announced their China Mobile deal, which has certainly gone through. China Mobile has already announced they're going to sell the iPhone 5S and 5C. You're like, great, guys. Thanks for letting, you know, Apple announce the devices. But but the question is, are they even going to announce the 5C in America?
I'll go with no.
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to.
That would be more interesting.
Yeah, I'm super stoked for it. I do not think they're going to. It had occurred to me because everybody had like said, you know, what's to stop people from why go for the more expensive one? What's the big selling proposition there? What are they going to do? Blah, 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 blah. But it would be awesome if they're like, it's not even available in America. Sorry. Better like next time, boys and girls. And I could totally see that happen, especially with. Yeah. Well, I mean, they do that to other countries all the time, you know. Sorry, guys, you can't have this device yet. Better luck next time.
I know HP makes printers specifically for certain countries.
Yeah.
Because you have certain, I don't know how much I can say without getting in trouble. There are certain market dynamics where our business model don't work in certain, does not work in certain countries.
And selling it at a loss and making it up on ink.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have to try a different business model, which, you know, is fundamentally different printers and supplies. So, I get it.
Yeah. So I don't know. That'll be exciting. That's the big one for.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out there.
Sorry. That's the big part about this week that I'm excited for. And also this is totally getting into the weeds on rumors, but I guess there's this giant shipment of set-top box for Apple that they. That I'm hoping they do a hardware refresh on the Apple TV. I want one so bad I can't stand it.
You're just waiting, huh?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because this is so stupid. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get one. I'm going to plug it into my 27-inch monitor that's sitting right next to the other one. And then when Mavericks comes out, I'm just going to use both screens and with AirPlay and, you know, when I need to. And then when I, like, climb into my bed, which... it's conveniently sitting 3 feet behind me. Now I'll have Netflix and ESPN Zone and Disney Channel and Apple iTunes Music, and oh, it's going to be great. I love it. I can't wait. I cannot wait. It's going to be perfect.
Mm. You're living the life, man. Living the life. So, what are we at? I don't even know. We'll do this one. So, do you know what the next big thing is going to be? Don't we all?
Tell me.
Well, I'm asking. That's the question. So, here's a bunch of startups, and I just want your yay or nay. Do you think this will be the next big thing? You're podcasting right now. Thanks for telling me that.
No, sorry about that. I'm getting... yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter.
How about Snapchat? Think that one's it's the next big thing? You think it'll be a big business? I think that's how they're trying to define it.
Is like it going to be $1 billion? I don't know.
Yeah,
I still use it. People still use it. I don't know how they're going to monetize it.
I sent you one earlier. Did you see it?
Yes, I did.
It's good.
I don't know how they would monetize it. It's a cool little app. I think it's... no.
No,
I'm not going to.
So yeah, so I guess it's two. Like, you know, will they be around for a while for the long haul, and will they actually make a lot of money?
I'll bet they'll be around for a while. I don't think they'll ever be a juggernaut.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah, I could see that. They probably should be bought by someone. Would probably be their best strategy. How about WhatsApp?
Which one's that one?
It's a messaging app. Allows you to send. It's think of an iMessage.
Yeah, that one's a pretty big one. Until you kind of like, I think what's going to happen, hopefully what will happen is people will start opening up APIs to be able to go between Google Chat and iMessages and Skype and everything, and that'll destroy all of your, I don't know why I hope that. I've been hoping that for, well, actually, the whole AIM thing and the instant messaging thing actually did do that for a little while, where there's a big consolidation, and like it went down like two players, and you could do it across like. So there's somewhat of a precedence of that. I think if you actually get to the point where you get those kind of because the whole point of WhatsApp is that it what's it called?
WhatsApp.
The whole point
Instead
of that
of
is
WhatsApp.
Yeah, that's right. The whole point of that is to, you know, basically be able to get around texting fees.
Right.
And if you can get all of the different platforms with their built-in messaging, instant messaging system service, and they all cross-communicate, then, you know, texting is dead. And WhatsApp can fit into that ecosystem, but it doesn't really have a real place anymore. So I think that'll be around as long as there is, you know, communication breakdown. But I think it's going to find less and less of a place to exist as time goes on.
Okay. All right. How about Oculus RV, otherwise known as the Oculus Rift?
I think the Oculus Rift has got a huge, huge potential in front of it.
Totally agree.
That's gonna be a bit of a juggernaut, and unless they get bought by somebody, but I don't think they want to get bought by someone. I don't think they need to get bought by somebody.
They started out as a Kickstarter project.
I do know them. I want one real bad. I might actually. I'm probably not going to get you one of your first generation ones. Probably won't. Maybe not even 2014. But Parallaxing.
That's when it's supposed to come out, actually. Yeah. So
Parallaxing, not my. Parallaxing is like one of my favorite like cool tricks. I think
you
it's
do the, like that.
Yeah, and you know the idea that it. It's so good. I want one. I'm excited. I don't even play enough video games to justify it, but whatever. Watch movies and stuff. But I think that one's got it. Well, obviously, Elon Musk is like, that was the end game on his whole VR thing. He was like, finally when we got it with the Oculus Rift, that was when it really, really, you could see the awesomeness of this little system that we had designed. Like, oh, man, that's so cool.
That is cool. What about, I'm probably not going to say this right, Wanelo. It's a shopping online replacement shopping at the mall long ago. What? So it's a combination of the words wants, need, love. So Wanelo. That's my computer. It offers a one site, a collection of stylish goods selected from shops around the web. It's Pinterest, but with a business model, essentially.
You know, honestly, I've never heard of it, but it sounds like it's not a bad idea. It's just, you know, one of those, can you get enough users to, Pinterest, why is Pinterest cool? It's because of the user base. It's the community. You know, it's just like anything else. It's not particularly more, you know, it's not like, it's got this brilliant algorithm that, you know, is crushing everybody else. It just took off. And part of what they did well was that they, you know, was you couldn't get in. You had to be invited in, which means you're special if you had your Pinterest thing. And so, I don't know. That seems like one of those ones where, yeah, I could see that taking off, but it's got to take off. Like, what'll be that magic that'll happen that'll get it to do that? I don't know.
How about Lyft? Airbnb for what is it? It's not for cars, is it? Yeah, for cars. Essentially, you're in San Francisco. You got to go somewhere. You turn on your Lyft app, and someone else who's driving around has their Lyft app on, and they go, "Oh, cool, yeah, I'll come pick you up."
This is the pink mustaches, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. They got a balloon.
Yeah, so if you're driving around San Francisco, kicking around SF, there's like you'll see cars driving around with these like big old pink mustaches, and you're like, what the heck are those? But that's what that it's this. It's essentially a crowdsourced taxi service, and the taxis hate it. They're trying to make it illegal as fast as possible,
which probably means they're onto something.
Yeah, it does. So that's the big. Is it ever going to be gigantic, and will it ever completely replace taxi services?
Nope.
Probably not. Just because of, you got to have a certain personality, and if it gets a bad reputation, the app will just, will self-destruct. Mm-hmm. But there will be another app that's a similar service that will replace it. Might be the same company, just a different brand.
True.
If they're smart, when the brand starts to tank, just jump ship to the next brand. Do the same thing, essentially. But say it's more secure than those other guys. Those other guys are terrible. Like you were the other guys. What the heck? But what would really kill it is if city and state governments make it illegal, and prompted by the taxi company saying, "We got to get licensed. You got to vet us. Like, why are you just going to let these people do it? And we pay extra to basically have a, secure market. So, hey, don't do that, guys. And that's the most dangerous thing for that type of a company, I think. And that goes for Airbnb, too. So far, they've kind of been able to avoid that, but there's this constant, you know, the hotels are constantly nipping at the bud, at the heels of the politicians trying to, how can we make this illegal so that we can go back to having a lock on what we do?
Okay. There's another one, MYO, or MYO. Depends on how you view it. They're all capital, so I'm going to go with MYO. The question is, what would the interface of the future look like? You know, obviously, Apple and Google are experimenting with voice controls. Microsoft is doing their 3D scanning software with Kinect. And there's a little company in Waterloo, Canada, that has an armband, which detects motions and muscle activity produced in the wearer's arm and translates them to gestures on a screen.
So basically it's a Wiimote with a little bit better sensitivity?
I guess.
Oh, sounds cool. I mean, I don't think that's going to be it. I think, you know, there's been long talk of, you know, it's like you think back to, you know, Jurassic Park and the one scene where they're like, you know, with the DNA chains.
And we
put together the, you know, with the Mr. DNA.
The frogs.
And I got that one scene of the guy with, like, the DNA chain that he's stretching. He's got the VR head glasses on. Well, and the reason why they assumed he needed gloves is because, well, how would you know what his hands were doing without the gloves? Well, obviously, Leap allows you to do that. Now, will it have a limited application because, you know, it's if you were to make something super sensitive that you have to strap to your arm so it gives you really good finite control and a lot of different dynamic stuff, will that have a place for a while? Yeah, sure. You could find a niche there. Just because, you know, Leap doesn't have the sensitivity and Kinect doesn't have the sensitivity. Is it a long-term solution? Absolutely not. But I don't think that's their goal. I think the goal is to you know,
yeah,
fill a niche because there is a type of interface that people want to be able to do, but they don't have the sensors to be able to do it. So they're giving you the sensors and it has a stopgap.
Fair enough. So far, they've raised $15 million and they've got 30,000 pre-orders.
That's a lot of money. That's not too bad.
Yeah. Not bad. A couple more. Braintree. Do you know them? Online and mobile, what are they? It's an application that lets people pay each other through text message. And they partnered with Simple, the banking startup in Portland, to make mobile payments easier for people who use a bunch of different devices. Yeah, it provides technology to process payments on the web and on mobile devices.
See, the real question is, you know, how do you make sure that your device is secure? You know, it's all going to be all about, like, how do you make sure that the person that's holding the phone should have access to the credit cards that it's connected to? If you could do that somehow,
Somehow, if you could just sense their finger.
Yeah, in a unique identifier to every individual.
If something like that existed, it would just take off, I bet. And that would be the perfect use case for it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Apple gives them access to that, you know, that API call on the fingerprint scanner. I think
maybe not right away, but eventually.
Yeah, I think they will.
Which, if they don't do it right away, it'll be a pure enterprise security.
I agree.
Okay, all right, which I think it will be. All right, and then King.
You're wrong, but
King.
No.
King. Well, we'll find out on Tuesday.
We'll find out you're wrong on Tuesday.
Okay. I don't think I am on this one.
Every so often, a new mobile game charms the masses.
Yes, King. It's something like Draw Something and Angry Birds or Minecraft. I don't know. Apparently, this one's pretty popular. You get 3 or more matching candies in a row, you win. They've got 45 million players, which is more than Spotify, Pinterest, and Zynga's Farmville 2.
Holy cow.
And Texas Hold'em Poker.
Whoa. Now that's a big one. Beat Texas Hold'em. Yeah, John McCain was playing Texas Hold'em during the serious stuff.
You can also buy so-called boosters to help advance to higher levels. Analysts estimate that these purchases could bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue each month. There's also no advertising in the game.
It's a video game, like any video game. It gets boring after a while. People move on. If the company can create another hit, yeah, they'll do fine. If they pull a Zynga and they never come up with another hit, they'll pull a Zynga and they'll do terribly. You know, it's,
so it sounds go ahead.
I can say there are very few games that kind of stay the test of time. Sudoku, Minesweeper, Tetris, Solitaire. Those are like your four. That's pretty much it. That's the ones that people will play forever. But there's like so much competition that nobody really can market out. You know, you don't become a huge success because you make a Sudoku app. It's cool. Congratulations. You know, live the dream while you can, but another idea up your sleeve because you're going to need it.
So it sounds like of all of those, you like the Oculus Rift the best.
Yeah. Outside of full on, you know, holograms that, you know, or laser projecting stuff into your eyes, you know, it's not the end all of projection, you know, stuff, but it's the best in the market. It's crazy good. And it, you know, and one of the big reasons for it is because it's not doing anything. It's not trying to pioneer any new technology. It's using a couple of different chips and a couple of different this and that, and then just stitching them together in such a way that it gives you a really, really unique and cool experience. So, yeah. And it, like, you know, plugs into video games, and who doesn't want that? Could you imagine being able to, like, look around your 3D Sim City, like, what's up? You're like, checking
that
out
would be cool.
Hey, man.
That would be cool.
Dude, oh, man. Playing Skyrim up against dragons in 3D? Oh, man, it's so good. I want one.
Fair enough. I think we got time for one more quick one.
Okay.
If you think you can do it.
I think I can. I'm going to do two super really quick ones. Okay. First off, HDMI 2.0 just got announced. I kind of predicted that HDMI would be like the end all, because why would you need more bandwidth? Once you kind of get to your quote unquote retina display, you know, quality where you can't differentiate pixels anymore at a normal viewing distance. Which is what the 4K TVs are, and evidently the 4K TVs don't work very well with standard HDMI. So they had to create another one. But so I'm going to re-predict that this is the last one you need. who knows? Nobody records in higher than 4K. 4K is, you know, the best cameras in the world don't record higher than 4K. 4K, your eyes can't differentiate the pixels. Is there a reason? Maybe. But I got to believe that we're kind of, you know, it's like nobody's trying to do much big. Nobody's done a huge pixel density jump in in your mobile devices, and nobody plans on it, because why would you? You can't see it. All you want to do is the image is
3D.
As crisp as it needs
3D.
To be.
3D. You want that's two a big double one. Images.
I'm going to say that's really, and that's actually, that's what necessitated the new HDMI, because you could squeeze out just enough bandwidth to do 4K with standard HDMI. Two images going right after each other require so much more bandwidth than what standard HDMI could do. So that was what pushed it over, 3D 4K TVs. It's fun, but, you know, expensive, stupid. The other thing that happened this week was Intel announced that they've now, instead of, you know, standard silicon wafer production, when you want to connect one transistor to another transistor, you use copper. That's like the interconnection. Generates heat, it's slow, it requires everything to be very close together. They basically came up with this idea where they're like, silicon is, you know, is a glass, it's just, you know, sand, it is glass, it's transparent. Silicon oxide is opaque, stuff bounces off of it. What if we were to make pure silicon tracks and then put silicon oxide along the outside of it, and then basically create fiber optics embedded in the silicon chip? And then we can do all of our, you know, communicating that way. And they're like, well, that sounds great, but you'd have to build laser production, you know, things that shoot lasers and things that read lasers into the silicon. Can you do that? And Intel was like, I guess we can. So it's pretty cool. It's another big step forward in the, you know, building optical chips. It'll a lot faster, a lot lower power consumption. But the biggest deal on this one, though, actually, and what they're going to do with it at first, is they basically, like, we can now send signals very quickly over, you know, fiber optics. And this is, like, part of the foundational technology that's going to go into Thunderbolt. That's, you know, they didn't mention that specifically, but these all kind of tie together as this, like, optical messaging system. But what it allows them to do is it allows them to now, you know, in classic server architecture, you have to put the hard drive and the RAM and the processor all in the same box. And then you basically have racks and racks of computers. Well, they're like, well, what we can do now is we can essentially have one rack that's just the CPUs, one rack that is RAM, and one rack that is hard drives. And you because it's all optical, you don't have the power loss, you don't have the latency issues that you do traditionally, so you can rethink how you do this stuff. So it's like the CPUs that draw a ton of heat or generate a ton of heat, you can put in a much better system for cooling, and it just like it allows you to do
more efficient server design.
Yeah, it allows you to do server design like way cheaper, way better, way faster. And the other thing that they're saying is that essentially like all servers today have dedicated RAM, dedicated hard drive. Well, now they're like, now everything's just going to be virtual memory. You'll get as much memory as you need because there's a RAM rack, there's a hard drive rack, and then there's the CPU rack, and the CPUs will just pull into RAM as much as they need when they need it. So it's, I don't know, it's very cool. You won't see a lot of it in consumer technology probably for a couple of years, but you'll start to see
enterprise
it.
Enterprise play yet again.
Mm-hmm. But it's what's really fun about it for me is that it's like, you know, that's the sort of thing that will trickle into fabs in the next 5 years, and they'll be like, hey, my company, can you build us one of these furnaces? And we'll be like, heck yeah, we can. Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. So, very cool.
Cool. That's mint.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Cool. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Man, a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. And next week we will talk solely about Apple, and it will be good. I'll tell you about how right I was and how wrong Matthew was, or vice versa. I'm open. So, yeah, cool. Cool stuff, man. Good show. Totally appreciate it. So, I'm not even kind of ready for this. Podcast closing. All right, I'm ready now. Cool. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My 49er fan brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Thank you.